This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Rise above and be in control with today's business headlines, driven by Volvo Cars.
7:49 right now. You're listening to The Morning Run. Han and Melissa here this morning as we take a look at the top business news of the day. But before that, let me tell you what's coming up on The Breakfast Grill just after the 8 o'clock news bulletin. Philip Satish Rao, the governor of the Institute of Internal Auditors, Auditors Malaysia, will be on The Breakfast Grill. So IIAM, that's the name of the institute. Joyce will be speaking to Philip Satish Rao. And I guess this is really quite interesting because in the wake of the 1MDB scandal, the role of internal auditing processes really helps or is instrumental in upholding an organization's integrity. I mean, over the years, the names of, you know, prominent fraud cases like Transmile comes to mind, Canmark Industrial comes to mind, Linear Corp comes to mind. So all these accounting scandals have really, I guess, created a bit of a trust deficit, right, in terms of transparency. So the role of internal accounting in the process or internal auditing process within a company, I guess, completely important.
Yeah, especially when you read the $1 billion will and you discover the kind of lapses, you know, on the part of auditors, you know, across so many different banks, right? You know, and also here in Malaysia as well, both internal and external guys, the compliance departments, even central banks as well. You know, if you read through some of these stories, you're thinking, wow, all it took was just like a phone call from Jolo or like, you know, some messenger.
Where were the checks and balances?
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Like, so, you know, you got to cast that net wider there. And I'm not going to mention names, but there was a whole page dedicated to one of the big four here in Malaysia, right? Yeah. So where were these guys during the whole debacle? You know, perhaps Joe Lo wouldn't have been Joe Lo if it wasn't for the lapses in the compliance and the auditors and all the safeguards.
Well, okay, so there's been a string of accounting scandals here. Why has it continued to happen? And, I mean, the question really is, are Malaysian auditors ill-equipped? Are they not trained well enough to cover these audit or corporate fraud? So I'm hoping these are some of the things that Joyce will be discussing with the Breakfast Grill guest, Philip Satish Rao, Governor of the Institute of Internal Auditors Malaysia, IIAM. That's coming up in about 15 minutes or so. Turning our attention back locally, we have economists at the Malaysia Rating Corporation, or MARC, projecting that the country's budget deficit will be between 3.5% to 3.8% of GDP this year. That's higher than Putrajaya's estimate of 2.8 to 3% for the year.
Yeah, well, more like Putrajaya's previous estimate there, right? So if you're going to 3.8% of GDP for the fiscal deficit, that would take us back a couple of years there. We were at that level about 2016, 2015, thereabouts. You know? And even with the drop in oil prices that we saw a couple of years ago, right, Well, Malaysia generally still was able to maintain that fiscal consolidation agenda. But it looks like this year, it's a whole different narrative right there. Looks to be blown wider to 3.5%.
But Mark is saying that this is a spike in the budget deficit. They're saying that, look, this is a one-off event. It's unusually high because the government is in the midst of repairing its balance sheet. And they expect, okay, so this year could spike. Next year, 2019, they're expecting the budget deficit to narrow slightly, 3.4%.
Yeah, but, you know, we have seen some guidance from the midterm review of the 11th Malaysia plan. So by 2020, the fiscal deficit target is 3% of GDP. But guess what? You know, we had already hit that mark last year, 3% of GDP. You know, So again, perhaps taking a step back in terms of the fiscal consolidation agenda. But the rest rationale that the government is saying now is that because of the expected slowdown, they're perhaps trying to, you know, make some room there to have that counter-cyclical measures from the fiscal side.
Yeah, and I guess this is interesting because, you know, we are exactly a week away from budget, Han.
That's
so,
right.
You know, I mean, it's I guess, a good time to take a look at how we're going to be addressing some of the debt. I mean, the expectations of new taxes, everyone's talking about that and what that will do, I guess, in terms of short-term pain, right? But the idea is for long-term gain.
Yeah, so obviously, you know, taxpayers, voters, you know, you listening right now, you know, budget 2019 is going to affect every one of us, right? But from a sovereign credit rating perspective, well, based on the messaging that they have already gotten, Moody's is saying that Malaysia's plan to widen that fiscal deficit and perhaps delaying that balanced budget, that could weigh negatively on Malaysia's sovereign credit rating. You know, given that the debt problems, well, I wouldn't say problem, but the debt burden is already a constraint on Malaysia's sovereign credit rating. But now with the plan to widen the fiscal deficit, that could be negative pressures.
Okay. I mean, Mark did also say that the debt problem will be addressed by firming up future economic growth plans rather than overzealous expenditure cuts. I'm not sure. So that feels to me like a more medium to long-term plan, right? So you do boost growth, but in the short term, what you do have to do is look at the expenditure. So you have to look at cutting how much the government is spending.
Well, but then you got to find a balance between cutting versus making sure that you spend efficiently to make sure that you still have that headline growth, right? Already, we are seeing the moderation when it comes to GDP growth outlook. The target is a range of 4.5% to 5.5%. That's a 50 basis point downward revision. And some of the other estimates that are coming out are saying, well, you know, by 2020, we'll be likely to be in the lower end of that range.
But I think some of the things that the government is also doing is, you know, looking at cancelling some projects that where they can trim the fat, so to speak. So looking at news now, we're also looking at Malakoff and Edra Power this morning because they're among the four companies falling victim to the government's July termination of the Independent Power Producers Projects, or the IPP projects. Now, the four projects that were cancelled, so previously it was not known. So it was just announced that there were four projects that would be cancelled. It wasn't named. But now we know the names of these projects. They include Tenaga and Malakoff's 700 megawatt gas-powered plant in Kapar, Selangor. Also, Amman Majestic and TNB's plant in Terengganu. We have Sabah Development Energy and SM Hydro Energy's hydropower plant there in Sandakan, Sabah, and a solar power quota of 400 megawatts that was given to Edra Power Holdings for the use of a solar powered plant.
Yeah, so we'll certainly look at how Malakoff and Tenaga shares fare when markets open in about 5 minutes from now, because Malakoff yesterday ended the day lower by 4.65%, right? So we'll see if that sell-off continues today as well. But going back to the rationale for why the ministry decided to scrap those four IPP. So the government is saying that, look, they already have sufficient electricity reserve margin. And so, you know, you don't want to pass on that capacity payments or the cost of adding to those capacity to the consumer. So that could save, I think, 1.6 billion ringgit.
Yes, that's right. So 1.26 billion ringgit. If I could just clarify some of the terminology, right? So we talked about capacity payments and electricity supply reserve margin. So what the reserve margin means essentially is that there's an excess of electricity produced by plants, and they need to produce this to ensure that there's enough supply during peak periods. So you have to have a reserve margin. But the reserve margin costs money to produce. Mm-hmm. So consumers are still, you and I, we're still paying for this excess energy in the form of what they call capacity payments. Now, according to the minister, around 30% of the electricity bill that we pay today is for capacity payment. So capacity payments, therefore, relies on how much reserve electricity that we have. Mm. So if we were to reduce that, Han, then perhaps it could mean that there could be a reduction in our electricity bill.
Yeah, possibly, right? So that's the ideal scenario here. But I think we also, I mean, it's also incumbent on us to perhaps highlight the potential downside risks as well. So by scrapping these four IPP projects, from what I've been told, you could lower the reserve margin down into the teens there, right? And is that enough of a buffer come peak demand season? Think about, say, the El Nino that we had, I think, a couple of years ago. You know, people were just cranking up their air cons like crazy, right? And so that's when you really strain the grid. So you need to have a healthy enough reserve margin to make sure that those kind of blackouts or those kind of inadequate supply doesn't actually happen.
Well, the Energy Science and Technology, Technology Environment and Climate Change Minister, if I could just shorten that to MESTEC, right, that ministry, Yeo Bi-yin is saying that actually the optimal level of the electricity reserve margin is about 32%, and that will remain so that, okay, you know, any kind of higher than necessary capacity is not I guess we can do without. I do want to say that we're missing a huge component in this conversation, is these contracts were done through direct negotiation. These contracts were awarded through direct negotiation. And according to the Association of Water Energy and Energy Research Malaysia, they reckon that if the government looks at other direct nego contracts, the government could in fact save 10 to 18 billion ringgit more.
Yeah.
Contracts like, for instance, the that were directly awarded were Track 4A, Track 4B, Edra Power as well. TADMAX Resources Pulau Indah Combined Cycle Gas Turbine Project, that was also a direct award.
Yeah. So I agree with the approach by the ministry here, right, whereby you can reset the tone whereby how these projects are awarded. So you cancel these four IPPs and you reset things, that's great. But the idea is that you don't delay for too long, because if you look at the projections for the demand for electricity, hey, we Malaysians, we cannot live without an aircon. If you look at the electricity production index, based on in the IPI, that's the Industrial Production Index, every month this year, it's showing about, 4 or 5% on year gain. So we're just churning out that electricity to meet that rising demand. So the idea is, okay, fine, cancel these four, reset, make them open tender, but then ultimately, you got to start awarding those contracts again.
Well, I'm curious to see what Malakoff and Tenaga will be trading at once market opens, which is going to be in about a minute or so. And the opening numbers will be brought to you by Lynn Mark in the 9 o'clock news bulletin next on BFM 89.9.
Keeping you on track for peak business performance with the new Volvo XC40, the expression of innovation. Volvo, made by Sweden.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.